morning. I'm Frederick County Executive Jan Gardner, and today I'm here once again to provide our weekly update on the COVID-19 virus and the county's vaccination efforts. And later, I will also announce some news that is totally unrelated to the COVID pandemic. So I'm joined today by our public health officer, Dr. Barbara Brookmeyer, who joins me every week. And then later, I will introduce a special guest related to our second announcement. So let's begin by taking a look at our current health metrics in Frederick County. The total number of confirmed cases of coronavirus in Frederick County stands at 16,826, which is an increase of 48 new cases in the last 24 hours. And as you can see from the chart that's being shown, the number of new cases continues to decline week over week. And this is certainly welcome news to see that chart going back down again. Hospitalizations, which have been a great concern to me, have been improving, but are a bit of a greater challenge, and that decline lags a bit versus our other statistics. As of this morning, there were 33 people hospitalized at Frederick Health Hospital with coronavirus, five of those patients being in an intensive care unit. Now, this is down from 42 a week ago, but it is up a few from 2 days ago when it went down to 27. So we still watch this, but I think the most key point to note is that it is down from 72 being hospitalized at the peak, which was just a month ago on January 18th. So that's about a 50% decline or better in hospitalizations. So we can look to continue to see those numbers improve. If you look at this graph, all the weeks throughout the summer, we had fewer than 10 people in the hospital. And some weeks we actually had 3 weeks where we had no one in ICU. So that's kind of our goal, is to get back to where we were last summer. So for people who think we're back to that, we're not there yet. So again, I encourage everybody to stay cautious. Now, while our metrics are improving, we still are tracking a little bit higher or worse than the state average, but we're closing that gap. It's pretty close right now. Our positivity rate is below 5, which is good. It is now at 4.04%, which is down from 4.8% last week, so that's a good directional improvement. And the statewide average is 3.74, so we're very close to the state. The 7-day rolling average of new cases per 100,000 population has also improved. It's down to 13.43 cases, which is an improvement of from 14.7. And so, again, we're happy to see that number improve. And I think I need the next chart, but the line on the graph here is the says the orange line, but I think the dark line is the county's number, and which was higher than the state for a number of weeks. The statewide average of new cases per 100,000 population is 13. But we're happy to see that number fall below 15. And again, this number was up in the 60s and 70s for a while at the peak, which was really not where we wanted to be. So we do unfortunately continue to lose longtime members of our community to the virus. In the past week, more than 7 people have died from COVID. Including 3 people in the last 24 hours. So as of this morning, 263 of our neighbors in Frederick County have lost their lives to COVID. To give you some perspective on that 263 number, if you compare that to opioid-related deaths, over 5 years, we lost 268 people to opioid overdoses and death. And so in 1 year, we're close to that number of deaths from COVID. So, again, you can find all these statistics on our website at frederickcountymd.gov/covidstats. I also track the number of COVID patients we transport with our fire and EMS crews week to week. Since last Thursday, our crews have transported 25 people known to be positive with COVID. An additional 45 people have shown symptoms. That is a slight improvement over last week, but it's still a lot of people, and it's more people per week than we had last spring during the peak of the virus. So as many people know, Frederick County Public Schools has opened to a hybrid model of instruction. It was slowed last week due to the weather, so they actually only had 1 day of instruction, but they continue this week. Frederick County Public Schools is maintaining their own COVID dashboard, which is at fcps.org. They report 6 staff cases and 9 student cases last week across the system, and that's changed from 7 staff last week and 6 students. So again, we'll report this data each week, and I will say it's probably too soon to actually see what the impact of hybrid education is in Frederick County. So I'm pleased to report that Frederick County residents have received over 55,000 doses of vaccine, when you count dose one and dose two from multiple locations and providers. 34,484 first doses have been received, which is 13.3% of the population, and 21,268 second doses for 8.2% of our population being vaccinated with two doses. Now, I will say I look at these numbers as adults, and if you go down and take the children out of our population, that statistic improves considerably because obviously children aren't in the queue to be vaccinated at this point. In other good news, on Monday, we finally received our expected shipment of first doses that we did not get last week due to bad weather. We actually got our dose for last week and this week at the same time. So that allows our vaccination clinics to be scheduled through the balance of the week and through the weekend so that we get all those doses into the arms of Frederick County residents as quickly as possible. So we'll be vaccinating more people this week than we could last week because we have the doses. I do remain concerned that Frederick County's overall allocation of first doses has declined from where it was for several weeks, where between the health department and the hospital, we were getting about 3,000 doses a week. We dropped last week to 1,400 doses. The hospital did get 600 doses this week, a slight increase, and so we're a little bit better than that, but we still have an overall decrease in the number of doses coming into Frederick County. We did have a discussion yesterday with Maryland Health Secretary Dennis Schrader and some others on this topic, and I will continue to advocate for the fair share of vaccines based on our population with our state partners. So again, on the good news front, Frederick Health Hospital's allocation was increased this week to 600 doses, up from 100 doses the week before, but down from 975 doses a week that they had routinely received for about 8 weeks. Frederick Health Hospital will be able to begin vaccinating some of their medical assistant patients, those over the age 75. I believe they're targeting people with comorbidities first. And they also will be immunizing patients who are in the hospital who are immunocompromised. So I am grateful to see an increase in the doses to the hospital, which partially restored their prior reduction. And I will continue to advocate for the same thing to be done for our public health department. Many other counties, even smaller population counties, have had more private sector providers come online, counting their retail pharmacies. So I also have advocated for those pharmacies who get their supply of doses from the federal government to be added to our community, because if they're from federal doses, they aren't in competition with us for the state allocation. And I've certainly advocated for a pharmacy located in the north part of the county, where there really is no provider other than the health department when they go up into the north part of the county to try to vaccinate people. So again, we're working hard to get as much vaccine as we can. There is some hope on the horizon with the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which may receive emergency authorization here today, yesterday, tomorrow. And we may see some of that come into our community as soon as next week. Now, that's a one-dose vaccine and a vaccine that can be more easily handled. So that will make it easier to do people faster because they won't have to have two doses. And it is possible that this can eventually get to our primary care physicians, which will then speed up the distribution effort. So even with a third vaccine, we know it'll take us months to vaccinate everyone. There is great concern right now about the new coronavirus variants that are out there, which some are believed to be more contagious. So if we do have more contagious variants, that could mean an increase in cases and hospitalizations, and we've certainly seen that in other parts of the world, particularly in England. So everyone needs to continue to take personal responsibility for their actions, to wear their masks, to wash their hands, and to keep a safe distance from people who are outside the people they live with in their household. And again, this remains true for people who've been vaccinated. We need people to continue to wear their masks and a physical distance. I can't say it enough. This is about personal responsibility. It is not the time to falter. We have been in this for almost a year. We have a ways to go, but we are moving forward. And so I want to, again, encourage everybody to do their part. So with that, I'm going to ask Dr. Brookmeyer to provide us with her update for the week on vaccinations and anything else she wants to add. So with that, Dr. Brookmeyer.
Thank you, County Executive Gardner. You can flip to the next slide. Yeah, so as with last week, we are currently serving individuals who are in Group 1A, 1B, and have started some of the 1C. Unfortunately, there still is not enough vaccine available for everyone who would like it and everyone who's in the eligible groups. So currently, for persons who are in 1C, we are going down the age groups by year with the hopes that we can communicate in a way that gives people a sense of where they are on the list. And so we are vaccinating this week persons who were born in 1947. And it may be into next week where we're still vaccinating persons born in 1947. Next slide, please. So when we look overall at Frederick County, we see that 13% of our Frederick County residents have received at least a first dose, and about half of them, 7%, have received their second dose. And that number is 33,831 for the numbers of persons who are Frederick County residents who have received their first dose. I will say that some of the vaccination that we've done at the health department and other Frederick County vaccinators, we're vaccinating people who may reside in other jurisdictions. And so this number here reflects the number of Frederick County residents. But since the first 1A group is about the occupational categories, we have people who work here in those occupational categories but may reside elsewhere. And the same thing with the educator group.
And those are yesterday's numbers, so they're a little bit higher.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And when we look at the doses received by the health department, as County Executive Gardner had mentioned, we are receiving 1,300 doses a week. This week it shows that we received 2,600, but that's because last week, due to McKesson's weather impacts, we did not receive our doses that week. So while it may look like we're receiving more, technically yes, but we received none last week. So at 1,300, you can see we are below the number of doses we received at the fourth week of vaccination. And for the foreseeable future, that is the number we'll receive. And I appreciate County Executive Gardner's advocacy on behalf of all the Frederick County residents to be able to get greater allocation coming into Frederick County from the state or from the federal government with their direct allocations to some of the pharmacies like CVS. Next slide, please. So, some of what people might not realize is that for the health department, there are some specific populations within the current eligible groups that the governor has asked that we specifically make sure we make vaccine available to every week. So the first directive is that we're to prioritize residents 65 years and older. And as I mentioned earlier, for Frederick County, in that 1C group, we are going down birth year by birth year so that we can try to provide some information to individuals about where they might fall on the list to be vaccinated. But we also must make sure that we vaccinate at least 100 persons in the educator category. So again, educators in the governor's definition includes institutions of higher education, so think colleges and universities. There are some other groups that technically are institutions of higher education that are in that. It's the public schools, it's the non-public schools, and it's the licensed childcare facilities. So also the health department, out of that group, we are to vaccinate each week at least one senior living community, and each week we are to also vaccinate at least one congregate group home in the developmental disabilities and or the behavioral health group homes. So you can see for the health department's allocation, there are quite a few carve-outs that we must make out of our 1,300 doses we receive each week. And I'm really excited to say that we've had a great response from the developmental disabilities community in assisting with our planning for some special clinics that can be run at a pace and in a manner that might be more comfortable for individuals with developmental disabilities. And we held a conference call that I believe 80 individuals, family members, caregivers, persons with developmental disabilities participated in, and we got great feedback, and was also an opportunity to share with them what they can expect when they come to our clinic this week. So in the slide that was just showing there, when we look at how many people are in the age categories, remembering that if we receive 1,300 doses a week, well, in the 75 and older group, we still have over 5,000 individuals on our vaccine interest form that have not been vaccinated by us. It's possible they've been vaccinated elsewhere, and we're asking people to unsubscribe and to contact us and remove their information. But when we look at the next age groups, it's about 1,800 individuals in each of the birth years. So that gives you an idea. If we receive 1,300 doses a week, but there are about 1,800 individuals in each of those age groups, each year birth cohort from 65 years of age and older, there are 1,800 of them, but we only receive 1,300 doses. And out of those 1,300 doses, we have to have the make sure that we're vaccinating educators, make sure that we're vaccinating the senior living communities, and make sure that we're vaccinating the developmentally disabled and behavioral health group homes. So with that information, the math works out that we can't even vaccinate one complete birth year each week. It will be questionable whether we can even do it every 2 weeks or a birth year in 2 weeks. And then also for the educators, we have over 11,000, almost 12,000 educators who indicated an interest in being vaccinated. When we look at those who work in Frederick County, our number is more like 6,000, but we have educators who live here but work elsewhere and have not been able to be vaccinated yet where they work, in the jurisdiction where they work. Next slide. So it's that demand, unfortunately, far exceeds our supply. I'm hopeful that with the new vaccines coming on board and with what's been in the news recently about the two existing vaccines, the Pfizer and the Moderna, that they anticipate being able to increase their production at some point in the near future. I'm hopeful that that balance will change. Next slide, please. For persons in Frederick County, there are the two big options for registering to be vaccinated. One is the county's pre-registration system by completing the vaccine interest form and submitting that online. And then the other is to check for the vaccine clinics through the Maryland Department of Health's website. They have a vaccine finder that allows you to be able to look for all sites based on a zip code, and that's covidvax.maryland.gov. Next slide. When we look at what is available, the greatest number of vaccines available each day are at the state's mass vaccination sites. They currently have three open, with one more having been opened this week. That's the M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. But opening soon, there will be one in Charles County, and then there will also be one in Hagerstown. However, I don't know the specific address or the timing on that yet. To schedule at those locations, you also go to that COVIDVAX, that's the V-A-X, .maryland.gov. And for Frederick County residents, you know, I'm sorry that we're not able to have one centralized system yet for all of the registration, because also we do have other vaccination locations available in Frederick County. That's the Giant Pharmacy, that's the CVS in Urbana, and these locations each have their own separate systems. So I realize it does take a lot of time for individuals to be able to look up all of those, and again, with the county executive's advocacy for trying to both get the pharmacy chains to participate in our registration list and to see what we can do with the state to have a centralized registration list. I appreciate that advocacy just to make it easier for everybody. Next slide, please. The vaccinations for congregate living communities, so that's one of the carve-outs that the health departments must make sure that we vaccinate at least one senior living congregate facility, and the county's Division of Senior Services. It's just tremendous working with them. They have helped to identify which senior living communities in Frederick County are, besides the age of individuals residing there, which communities also have social vulnerability. And the CDC has a social vulnerability index that you can go check that out, but it takes into account income, housing, stability, food insecurity, so a variety of things. And our Senior Services Division has helped to identify those senior living communities that the state of Maryland has asked that we jointly prioritize and vaccinate. Another part of that whole partnership is the Fire and Rescue Services, the Community Mobile Health Program. They have gone out and are going to locations to provide the vaccine to persons. And on the next slide, you can see the facilities that through this coordinated partnership with the Division of Senior Services and the Division of Fire and Rescue Services and for the Health Department, that we are making it out to each of those facilities. More detail will be provided to the residents in those communities as we're able to schedule them. Our experience last week with the variability in the delivery of the vaccine, we're unable to make commitments weeks out in advance. And so as we are assured that we will have vaccine in hand to follow through on the commitment each week, we'll be communicating through the managers of those buildings to the residents of those buildings. Next slide, please. Yeah, so we are hoping real soon that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be approved tomorrow. I understand the FDA is meeting, and it may be shortly after that that we, well, shortly after that we will hear what the decision is, whether it is authorized for emergency use, and it's exciting to have another option that's available. It will, as the county executive had mentioned, it has some tremendous benefits over the existing vaccines in terms of its being easier for local pharmacies and potentially doctor's offices to be able to handle it, because it can be just at a regular refrigerator temperature for up to 3 months compared to needing the super ultra cold and then the ultra cold freezers. But it has some other benefits that I'm looking forward to being able to add that to the arsenal that we have available. Next slide, please. So the question, I'm hearing this question a little more often now, which is, now that the case numbers are going down and the case rate is going down and the positivity rate is going down, do I still need to wear my mask? And the answer is yes. Face coverings, besides they're still being required in all indoor and outdoor public spaces, where you might come in contact with other individuals in the outside part, on the indoor, it is required. The masks, we still need to wear the face coverings, you know, both to protect ourselves and to protect others. And even for individuals who are vaccinated, I understand everybody's intense desire to try to do more quote-unquote usual things. I won't say normal, but usual things. Including seeing family members. And so it's all on a continuum. You're probably tired of hearing me say that, you know, if we wanted to talk about what's safe, you know, what's absolutely safe, well, that would be having no contact with anyone or anything from the outside. That might be safe from an infectious disease perspective, but not good for every other aspect of one's life. So then it's a question of the gradations of risk. And we've talked before about all the layers of protection. So the layers of protection include, first, if you have any symptoms, you stay away from others. If you are going to be around others, you don't have symptoms, then the next is, well, and you haven't been exposed to anybody, so you're not advised to quarantine. The next is that distance, the 6-foot distance. Then it's the face covering. And then it's the time, how much time you're spending. And then it's the setting. Is it indoors, outdoors? What's the ventilation? So all those factors being taken into consideration, vaccination is a huge help with all of that. But because the vaccine is new. We haven't had years of experience to be able to have confidence in knowing the likelihood of the vaccine in preventing somebody from becoming infected, and then also the risk of spreading that to other people. So to be cautious at this point, the recommendation still is, even after someone's been completely vaccinated, which is a minimum of 2 weeks after their final dose of that vaccine, we're still advising and recommending that people wear their face coverings and be mindful and cautious of the distancing, of the time, and of the location where you're around folks. Certainly, when we think about it, if somebody's starting with going to see grandchildren and great-grandchildren or children, those small groups where people are still being mindful about their exposures in the 14 days prior to people getting together, does provide a much better layer of protection than what we had before the vaccines were available. Next slide, please. And so if there are seniors who are 75 and older, or now I would also say 74 and older, if you have signed up, if you haven't signed up, you haven't heard from us, please, please do reach out to us. We have email addresses that we haven't gotten responses from and telephone numbers that we've called and haven't gotten responses from. We want to reach you. And so please, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, if you don't have access to the computer, please call our number 301-600-7900. That's 301-600-7900, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. We have high call volumes on Mondays typically, so I ask that you be patient and also consider calling at other times. And we also have that in Espanol at 301-600-7905. That's 301-600-7905. Next slide, please. And that is it for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Brookmeyer. We appreciate all that you and your staff do. It's really a lot of work. Certainly, the health department continues to do contact tracing and testing, as well as vaccinating. So it is a big task. We still do have months of work ahead of us to get everyone vaccinated who wants to receive the vaccine. We're certainly optimistic that the new vaccine and an increased volume in the existing vaccines will help us to increase the pace of vaccination, and we hope that will pick up in March and April. I will say the state has been getting an increased number of doses. At one point, they were getting 72,000 a week, then it went to 88,000, then it went to 118,000, and I believe it's gone to something higher than that. All of the majority of the doses are going to the mass vaccination sites. Most of the counties have received a reduction in doses. So unfortunately, we are encouraging people, if they are able to travel, to try to get appointments at those locations. Now, we are in a race to vaccinate and get ahead of the coronavirus variants. And we do want to get as many people vaccinated as possible. So right now, while demand is certainly exceeds available doses, we do want to encourage everyone who has an opportunity to be vaccinated, to get vaccinated, to be vaccinated. The vaccines are safe, they're effective, and we do need to get more than 70% of our population, adult population, vaccinated to effectively slow or stop the spread of the virus. That really is the ultimate goal, and so we need people to get vaccinated. So if you're in an eligible group, please take advantage of the opportunity when it comes to you. So we do need people to be vaccinated to win the battle against the coronavirus. Now, Dr. Brookmeyer mentioned this, and the numbers are up on the screen, but Frederick County government did stand up a call center to support the vaccination effort, and it's really been focused on assisting seniors with scheduling appointments, as well as other people in our community who may not have internet access. The call center has been very successful. It certainly helped hundreds of our residents each week to schedule appointments. The call center has implemented new software, which has certainly improved the system, and it is going to allow us to begin to track statistics as well. We do have 25 county government employees who are working as call takers, with about an average of 15 people staffing the call center each day. Some of those employees are working the call center full-time, while others are working part-time and also managing their regular job responsibilities. So I do want to thank all these individuals for stepping up to manage the call center. So, and again, they've helped hundreds of people make appointments. So if you're 75 and older, I've had people contact me who are 75 and older. We flip them right to the call center. The call center will call them and get them scheduled. We're really trying to do that 75 and older group first and work backwards. 94% of the deaths in Frederick County have been in people age 65 and older. And so this is why the goal is to vaccinate that older population first while trying to do a number of other things at the same time. The call center has managed over 12,000 inbound calls since its inception in January, which is actually just last month. It seems like a long time ago. And the call takers are also making outgoing calls, trying to get a hold of people who are in that vaccine interest form list who may have provided us with a bad email or, you know, because they had a typo or something, and we're trying to reach out to all those people. I do want to thank Mary Crum, who's taken on the supervisory responsibility for the call center, and thank each employee who has shifted their work to supporting the call center, either full-time or part-time. Again, the call center is open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, 301-600-7900, or in Spanish, 301-600-7905. And I have to give special thanks to our employees who are Spanish-speaking for also stepping up to make sure we could serve that community. So with that, we're going to go on from COVID and go to something different and something new. So throughout the pandemic, one of the best and safest activities for people has been outdoor activity. And our Frederick County parks have been busy with people coming to walk, bike, run, exercise, enjoy nature. The fresh air and the wide open spaces of Frederick County parks allow people to stay physically distanced. They allow us to get out and improve our mental health and address some of the cabin fever we all have. And our county parks are a wonderful place to visit. I will say I regularly personally walk in our parks. Even through the snow, I've walked in the parks. I enjoyed seeing the kids tobogganing at Pine Cliff Park last week. So that was that lifted my spirits. So over the past year, our parks have become a refuge for many. In fact, in 2020, our parks saw more than 3 million visitors, which is an amazing 44% increase over the previous year. So, and we know the pandemic is just one reason for that increase. We also opened a beautiful new regional park in the southwest part of the county called Othello Park, and we greatly increased the size and amenities at the Utica District Park. The long-awaited Othello Park, located near Brunswick, opened in the summer, and in addition to its natural and synthetic turf sports fields, picnic shelters, and playgrounds, it is our first park to have an equestrian trail. It's a great place to explore, to walk, to run, or bike. And again, the Utica Park is the county's largest park. It has a tournament complex, which we think will be very popular in the future, a destination playground, picnic shelters, and a trail that winds through the woods. Another good place to go for a walk, and I've had people tell me when you go to Utica, you can spot some eagles. So that is, if you're interested in that, it might be a place to go. So we're very proud of our parks. Frederick County Parks are truly gems. So today, I'm very excited to announce that we have acquired land to add a new gem to our list of parks. Yesterday, the county purchased 152 acres of land for Mount St. Mary's University to develop a new North County Regional Park between Emmitsburg and Thurmont. The parcel straddles Modern Station Road, just east of US 15. You can see a visual on the screen where the land is adjacent to the campus and south and east of the highway. So is that going to move? Oh, there we go. So I'll let you take a pause to look where it is. So that's the parcel of land. And you can see the university to the north. The property is currently zoned agriculture. You can see it's a combination of open fields as well as forested sections. And Mount St. Mary's University actually did a concept plan, which we've overlaid on the site, so you can get an idea of what might be there in the future in terms of fields and other amenities. So it will be a park that can offer both active and passive recreation. We do appreciate that the Mount had this concept plan drawn up because it does help people visualize what the future park might look like. The concept plan includes courts for basketball, volleyball, tennis, and pickleball. There could be a dog park, synthetic and natural turf sports fields, picnic shelters, a multi-purpose building, a playground, and certainly a trail. There is a small cemetery located on the property, which will certainly be preserved and maintained. Until we're ready to start construction, the land will continue to be leased as farmland. And we're very excited about this. This has been a long time in the making. It's been something I worked on when I was president of the county commissioners back in 2009 and 10. It didn't happen before I left in 10. Kind of got shelved by the people who came behind me, and now we finally have made this a reality. So I'd like to invite Dr. Trainer, who is the president of Mount St. Mary's University, to come up and share a few words.
Thank you, County Executive Gardner, and thanks to your terrific parks staff who did a great job in working with us to bring this to fruition. I share your excitement about this regional park and applaud you and the county for your vision in planning a sports hub in northern Frederick County by locating the park next to the university's PNC Sports Complex, home of our 24 NCAA Division I teams. We are thrilled to invite youth and adults from across the county and indeed the greater Washington area to experience the beauty of Mary's Mountain and potentially tap into the resources offered by our coaches, trainers, and athletes, as well as those of the new regional park. As the largest private employer in the northern part of the county, Mount St. Mary's is committed to the area's economic development and community well-being. We are pleased to have offered the 152 acres for this regional park and to have the county as a great partner in understanding the importance of athletics in human development. The Mount is grateful for the employment and developmental learning opportunities that the park will bring to our students and the university's ability to be among the many organizations that will use the park's facilities for recreational and athletic activities. Thank you. Thank you so much for being such an excellent partner in our shared commitment to expanding access to sports and recreation opportunities and fostering the growth of youth sports in the region by locating the park adjacent to Mount St. Mary's. Go Mount and go Frederick County.
Thank you, Dr. Trainer. I appreciate your enthusiasm. You're cheering us on, both the Mount and the county. It's much appreciated. I also want to thank the Mount's Board of Trustees for making the decision. It's a big decision to decide to sell a piece of property. But I will say, I think we'll have a good partnership for many years to come. The park will certainly be able to be used by the Mount, and it will also be able to be used by the public. And some of those time frames are going to be opposite of each other. So I think it's going to be a great partnership moving forward. So as with any proposed park, the development of the North County Regional Park will have a public process with many opportunities for people to provide input into the plan. A master plan advisory committee will be formed, which is our normal process. And it will include representatives from the local recreational councils, sports leagues, citizens who might want to use the park, civic associations, and certainly members of and property owners who are adjacent to the park. So we'll have a lot of people interested in this. I will say when we opened Othello Park, I got a few emails from people from the North County saying, when are we going to get our regional park? So I really had to hesitate to say, soon. So this is always the first step, so we're pretty excited about that. And of course, any master plan ultimately has to get approval through the Planning Commission and our Parks and Rec Commission. We certainly appreciate all that they do. So we're excited to be moving forward with it. The need for a park in the North County has been on the priority list for some time. We first had conversations with the university about acquiring land back when I was president of the county commissioners between 2006 and 2010. We almost had a purchase finalized, but a new board of county commissioners was elected and decided not to proceed with it. So this effort has been under discussion for more than a decade. So it gives me great pleasure to see it become a reality. I do want to thank our great park and rec staff under the leadership of Director Jeremy Courtwright and our deputy director, Bob Hicks, for your work to make this a reality. We really look forward to this new regional park in northern Frederick County. I think it is good news that we can celebrate in the midst of our health pandemic. And, you know, life continues to go on, and we continue to try to make sure we can improve and provide a high quality of life for everybody in Frederick County. So it's a great day for our community with this announcement. And with that, thank you for joining us. Stay safe. And again, wear your masks, physical distance, and wash your hands. We need to make sure we keep up our hard work to get through the next several months. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Job, there are many helpful resources available through our website, www.frederickworks.com. Visitors can access the latest unemployment insurance information, current job openings, job search workshop materials, and more. Many of our in-person services, such as resume reviews and practice interviews, are now available for job seekers to access remotely. Frederick County businesses can get all the latest updates from grant opportunities to details about relief packages through our website and social media platforms. We encourage anyone who could benefit from any of this information to visit our website, follow us on social media, or just give us a call, 301-600-2255.
We've missed you too. As of June 1st, contactless curbside pickup of materials is available by appointment. What does contactless curbside pickup look like? Three easy steps. First, place a hold. Use the library catalog or call the library branch for assistance. Second, receive notification. Follow the link in your hold notice or call the library where your items are being held to schedule a curbside pickup appointment. Third, pick up items during the appointment time. Look for the curbside pickup sign, call the number on the sign, and follow instructions for safe delivery of items. Library materials that were already on hold prior to our initial closure in March will be available for curbside pickup by appointment starting June 1st. Lastly, if you are returning materials, please use the exterior book drops to ensure proper quarantine procedure. For more information about curbside pickup, please visit us at fcpl.org/curbside, and we'll see you soon.
COVID-19 is sweeping our nation, and in order to keep everyone safe and healthy, many facilities are temporarily closing down, including senior community centers. For seniors who are 50 years and older and want to keep their brains active and stay engaged, well, you're in luck. Frederick County's Senior Services Division is now offering enhanced virtual classes and activities on the virtual 50-plus community center. Seniors can access the Virtual Community Center at frederickcountymd.gov/virtual50. From virtual tours through museums, arts and crafts, live instruction for theater workshops, music lessons, and ukulele jam sessions, fitness activities such as yoga, meditation, Zumba, and updates on COVID-19 information, as well as do-it-yourself face mask instructions, and more, can all be found on the virtual 50-plus community center. All classes and activities are free, but registration is required. Register at frederickcountymd.gov/virtual50. Donations can also be made on the site. Stay home, stay safe, and stay active.
As a service to our citizens, the Frederick County website now offers a one-stop central location for resources related to the coronavirus or COVID-19. Find out what you should know, what you should do, and how you can stay informed. Agency announcements will also be posted. Visit frederickcountymd.gov/coronavirus to find out more.
AI dashboard has been unveiled by Frederick County government. This easy-to-use page will provide the public with up-to-date statistics for local COVID-19 cases. Citizens can view updated charts and data about testing, cases and hospitalizations, as well as weekly statistics about cases related to nursing homes. The Frederick County dashboard can be viewed online at frederickcountymd.gov/COVIDstats.
Frederick County Public Libraries is here for you, and we have everything you need to keep your family entertained at home. And with their new temporary online card, there has never been a better time to be a library cardholder. Cards are free for anyone who lives or works in Maryland, and with an easy online sign-up, you are just minutes away from accessing free, digital, and downloadable content. Instantly stream e-books, audiobooks, TV shows, movies, and more from the comfort and safety of your own home. Find out more and get your library card at fcpl.org.
Now you can stay up to date during the coronavirus health emergency. Receive official information from Frederick County simply by texting the keyword FredCOVID19 to 888-777. This new opt-in feature is offered through Alert Frederick County.
The best way to protect yourself from 2019 novel coronavirus is to avoid being exposed to the virus. Additionally, there are preventative actions that you can take to protect yourself and your family from the spread of respiratory viruses that can make you sick. These include stay home if you're sick, cover your cough, and wash your hands.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jay Butler, Deputy Director for Infectious Diseases at CDC. I'd like to talk to you about the new virus that causes the disease COVID-19. Older adults and people who have severe chronic medical conditions like heart, lung, or kidney disease, or diabetes may be at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are one of the people at increased risk for serious COVID-19 illness, it's especially important for you to take action to reduce the risk of getting COVID-19 now. The first thing you can do is take care of your own health. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol if soap and water are not available. Cover your coughs or sneezes with a tissue, or cough or sneeze into your elbow, not your hands. Avoid contact with people who are sick. Clean and disinfect.
So a thriving craft beer industry is excellent for Frederick County. It brings tourists to Frederick. The more we have, the more breweries we have, the more people come to Frederick. We used to think that more competition was actually bad, but it's not. More competition is good because people come and they stay for a weekend. They visit several breweries in a day and make a day trip out of it.
You know, we have people coming from all over the place, and they're coming not just, you know, by random chance coming through. They're deliberately coming here. So I think it's helpful to the city in terms of, you know, tourism and of course, tax base.
We give back to the community. We do fundraisers. We do drives to give back to the community, try to do as much as we can on an annual basis.
Overall, we've seen over 150% growth in the last 5 years between the wineries, breweries, distilleries. So it was really booming before COVID hit back in March of 2020. We had 12 craft breweries and 5 farm breweries. And then there's also some that are in the pipeline that are still opening, even with what we are experiencing today.
By the time we opened up, yeah, we were right in the thick of it. Thankfully, they were past the point of having a complete shutdown. But, you know, we're still only at 50% capacity indoors. So that's one of the limitations that we're dealing with.
So the craft beer industry has really been under the same guidelines and requirements that our restaurants and food service industry has been here in Frederick County.
We had to shut down for a period of time where we could only do to-go sales, and we had to have 50% less capacity in our whole building, and we had to space the seats apart big time, which sometimes would put us at less than 50% capacity. So been managing and trying to deal with, you know, less people, less customers for the past year.
Some of them have also, you know, taken the steps to close their tasting room indoors, and they are only allowing people outdoors for the safety of their staff, and then also closing during the winter months because obviously people are not sitting outside as much. And so with reduced capacity, they've had to get creative in how they do business. A new app has started up called Beer Me, and so a lot of our craft beer industry has participated in that, that delivers beer right to people's doorstep in Frederick County. So that's been a huge win for people who want to try local products.
We jumped on the bandwagon of doing beer deliveries. We have taken opportunities that we can go to like different outdoor events and like sell beer there and try to be socially distanced and, you know, just moving and hustling out in the scene a little bit more than we probably would have.
One thing that the state afforded us was the ability to sell kegs. Previously, there was a limit of 288 ounces that we could sell for to-go, which is a case of beer. And a keg of beer is a whole lot more than that. So they lifted that restriction. It'd be nice if after, you know, COVID is done, that they allow us to continue to do that, because, you know, we've had a number of customers that, you know, buy kegs, they have a kegerator at home, and I think that's a good option.
Since the pandemic began, we have really been trying to help our business community as a whole through different grants, whether they're federal grants or state grants, and get money out to our businesses because we know they're struggling. So the craft beverage industry has been one of the industries we've really targeted.
We've taken advantage of a few grants and loan programs that are out there to help small business like myself, PPP loan, Economic Disaster Relief Fund, some grants from the city and the county as well.
So there was one grant specifically for, you know, outdoor heating, and so we got one of those grants, and it provides funding for the propane heaters and the propane itself. There's been some offsetting things that have helped in terms of providing additional outdoor seating. You know, the city had various options, and one of them is called Parklets. They put up jersey walls, and we were able to put a number of tables out there, which, you know, during warmer weather, those are full. And then, of course, they gave us temporary permission to put seating out along Carroll Creek.
So I would say the industry as a whole has just really done what works for each business. You know, what works for one brewery doesn't work for the other, but as a whole, they've gotten very creative. To find local breweries in your area, visit homegrownfrederick.com, and you can search for breweries that are near you or throughout the county.
Hello, I'm Deputy Ken Olin with the Frederick County Sheriff's Office Patrol Operations Division. Frederick County has many roads with narrow lanes and double yellow lines. Many of these roads have low vehicle traffic volumes, and many are great places for bicyclists to ride. Because of the narrow lanes, it's impossible for motor vehicles to safely pass these bicyclists and maintain a safe distance of 3 feet without crossing the double yellow line. In Maryland, it's now legal to cross the solid yellow line when it is safe to do so in order to pass a bicyclist. So, what should a motorist do when they come upon a bicyclist on the road? First, slow down. Then make sure you have plenty of room to cross over the double yellow line and return far enough ahead of the bicyclist and not put anybody in danger. If there is oncoming traffic, wait until it passes. Once it's safe to pass, proceed cautiously and give the bicyclist plenty of room. If you cannot see over a hill or around a curve in the road, then wait until after the top of the hill or around the bend before passing. Remember, on these roads, bicyclists may use the full lanes and often will travel in the middle of the roadway when going around a curve or over a hill in order to make themselves more visible to motorists. Also, they may ride away from the edge of the road because of debris, potholes, or a steep drop-off. After passing, you must make sure that you're clear of the bicyclist before making any turns. The bike has the right-of-way, and you must yield to the bike when you are turning. If you know you're about to turn shortly after you pass the bicyclist, then you should not pass, but wait until the bicyclist passes your turn. Watch out for children on bicycles. They are often unpredictable. Expect the unexpected. Strictly observe speed limits in school zones and in residential areas. Respect each other, as we're all legally allowed on the road together. With these tips in mind, motorists and cyclists can all get along and be safe on the roadways with one another.
Are you looking for a cat, dog, or small animal to complete your family? Well, Frederick County Animal Control and Pet Adoption Center is currently offering virtual adoptions. To see a list of all of the available animals, take a look at the shelter's Facebook page. There you can find pictures and information about each of the pets searching for forever homes. If you are interested in a cat and would prefer to visit with the animal prior to adoption, the Cat Cafe in Newmarket is open to the public. If you are interested in adopting a dog, please be prepared to bring your entire family and any existing dogs to meet the shelter dog and FCAC's outdoor play area if selected. To begin the adoption process, go to frederickcountymd.gov/FCAC and click on the Adopt tab to obtain an adoption application. Make sure the application is legible and that you thoroughly answer every question. The application is a way for staff at Animal Control to identify what adopters want and what animal will best fit their home and lifestyle. Questions include, do you have other pets? Do you have children? Are you looking for a young pet or a senior pet? What personality traits are you seeking in a new family member? And much more. Once the application is complete, email it to animalcontrol@frederickcountymd.gov. Staff will check your application and send you a list of up to 3 animals that will be a good fit for your home. Applicants have 24 hours to choose what animal they would like to adopt. Then an adoption interview is scheduled. The interview and payments via credit or debit card are completed over the telephone. Following a successful interview, families make an appointment to pick up their new pet from the shelter or cat cafe. If you would like more information on virtual adoptions, call Frederick County Animal Control and Pet Adoption Center at 301-600-1546.
Since March of 2020, COVID-19 has been affecting our country and many parts of the world. Now, Frederick County has a number of COVID-19 testing sites scattered around the county for accessible testing for residents. But recently, Frederick County's Division of Utilities and Solid Waste Management thought of a better way to test for COVID-19 in the county, by testing the wastewater.
We began collecting samples in May of this year for coronavirus analysis.
The Ballinger McKinney Wastewater Treatment Plant has around 7 to 8 million gallons of wastewater flowing through it a day. Flows come from all portions of the county.
We have service in areas of Adamstown, Urbana, Newmarket, the Linganore area, and portions ringing the city of Frederick, north of the city, south of the city. The wastewater is composed of what's going down drains in the fixtures within homes and businesses. What we see at Ballinger McKinney is representative of the waste stream, you know, laundries, showers, kitchen wastes, bathrooms waste.
Staff members collect samples of wastewater twice a week at the wastewater treatment plant, and then it is shipped to a lab in Rockville named Cosmos ID, where the samples are examined and tested for COVID-19. The process is simple.
We've chosen a point in the wastewater treatment plant that's representative of all the flow that's coming into the facility before it's received any treatment whatsoever. Once staff are properly garbed in protective equipment, and they're simply dipping a sample of that flow coming into the plant.
By now you're probably wondering, what are the advantages of testing COVID-19 in wastewater? Frederick County's health officer, Dr. Barbara Bruckmeyer, has the answer.
From a public health perspective, is that it at this point seems to me to be the single best tool to gather surveillance data for the whole county. And by surveillance, It, in my mind, what that refers to is to be able to know what is the level of infection or virus activity in our county. So part of what we know from individual humans, though, is that from studies, people can start to have virus shedding and virus showing up in their waste several days before they develop symptoms. And we also know from our local data, which is also similar to the national data, that up to 40% of people who have had tests and have tested positive say, I don't really recall ever having symptoms. So we're looking forward to seeing whether we can see whether there's a correlation between the results, between the concentration of virus in the wastewater and what we're seeing in the community. And if there is a correlation, does that correlation give us some advanced knowledge or maybe some forecasting of what is occurring in our population, but we aren't yet seeing in the testing results and the hospitalizations?
Frederick County has been one of the leaders in the state for testing wastewater for COVID-19, but scientists are still developing better ways to find significant data.
We've been getting some results since May and June of this year. Hopefully, once they get everything worked out, they're able to turn those samples around in 3 to 5 business days.
It's worth at least a trial of 6 months to see what we can do in terms of both advancing the general scientific knowledge for everyone's benefit, and then also specifically to see how that can better inform us about the situation and the experience in Frederick County.
Whether you find yourself spending more time at the baseball field or just enjoying the outdoors, we've got dinner covered. The delivery location, that is. Parkside Pickup designates food delivery locations in 9 city and county parks. Participating parks include Baker Park, Whittier Lake Park, Hill Street Park, Ballinger Creek Park, Urbana District Park, Old National Pike Park, Pinecliff Park, Rose Hill Manor Park, and Utica District Park. From busy sport families to a lunch date for two, this program can be catered to you. To utilize this service, simply scan the QR code and select your park location. View a list of participating restaurants that will deliver to your park location and order your food. Pick up your order at the designated pickup location. Now just sit back and enjoy. Remember to follow all CDC guidelines. For any restaurants interested in participating in this program and willing to offer delivery service to one of our participating parks, please contact Melissa Muntz at Visit Frederick and provide your restaurant name and type of delivery service that will be used.
At a time when many are hunkering down and practicing social distancing to limit the spread of COVID-19, you can still come up with creative ways to help your neighbors. Consider calling others by phone or doing a video chat. You could drop off food or household items on somebody's doorstep. Kids home from school could write a friendly note or color a picture for a neighbor. It's especially important to reach out to seniors or other vulnerable neighbors. They may feel lonely or have special needs and need to hear a friendly voice. You could also offer to go to the grocery store or pharmacy drive-thru to pick up something for them. Others may be feeling the financial crunch right now and need essentials or help with meals. Don't forget to help pet owners. You can walk their dog, pick up pet food, or get something from the vet. You can also support small businesses feeling the crunch. Buy gift cards online or order delivery or carryout from local restaurants. Donate to reputable nonprofits. There are many creative ways to help others. For more information about Frederick County's response to COVID-19, visit frederickcountymd.gov/coronavirus.
A new online dashboard has been unveiled by Frederick County government. This easy-to-use page will provide the public with up-to-date statistics for local COVID-19 cases. Citizens can view updated charts and data about testing, cases and hospitalizations, as well as weekly statistics about cases related to nursing homes. The Frederick County dashboard can be viewed online at frederickcountymd.gov/COVIDstats.
Frederick County Workforce Services and its partners are proud to support Frederick Works, One Job at a Time, an employer hiring initiative that encourages Frederick County businesses to create or fill at least one new job to boost our local economy. So far, the initiative has tracked over 1,500 jobs. There's no cost for employers to participate, and the benefits of joining include positive community recognition and free publicity. Visit www.frederickworks.com/onejob for more information.
Many Frederick County government agencies are now operating a bit differently compared to how things were before COVID-19 swarmed our area. Frederick County Animal Control and Pet Adoption Center is a prime example of modifying the day-to-day operations due to COVID-19 restrictions.
So our facility right now is closed to the public, and that's the significant change that we notice. We don't have visitors coming in, we don't have members of the public coming in to visit or just to look around. As far as regular day-to-day operations, it's all still the same. We show up every morning, 6 o'clock, to take care of animals. Officers are on duty at 7. We go through our normal routine of feeding and medicating and cleaning, laundry, dishes. We are adhering to all the mandates that we need to. We are wearing masks when we're inside the building. When we are in any public area within our building, we're wearing masks. We stay at least 6 feet apart from one another. We do have bifurcated staffing, meaning that we have two different teams. So the admin staff is on two separate teams. The officers are divided as well, and the kennel staff. So we have a team A and a team B that are here Wednesday afternoon through Saturday, and then Sunday through Wednesday morning.
Even animal control officers are doing things a bit differently too, but that doesn't stop them from providing services in Frederick County.
We did a lot of things to try to minimize our face-to-face contact with people. Some of the calls that were minor in nature, we tried to handle over the phone with resources, knowledge, advice, things like that. A lot of situations we still responded. Social distancing, you know, backing up 10 feet, trying to keep a safe distance away from people, always wearing our masks. There's a fine line we try to balance animal care, customer service, public safety in relation to public health. Every day of the week, we're available.
One big difference that the animal shelter noticed was the absence of the friendly face-to-face interaction with volunteers and visitors at the shelter.
So right now we have 0 volunteers. We miss our volunteers. Normally we have about 200 volunteers and about 20 to 30 that come in on a routine basis. But right now, because we are trying to adhere to all the coronavirus mandates and restrictions, we don't have any volunteers in the building. It's extremely quiet. We just don't have the busyness of people interaction. We don't have the folks asking us questions or about, you know, animals specifically or what we do in general. So that is definitely different. And it's been an adjustment period, because while we all start in this business because we love animals, we also love people. And so not having that people interaction is definitely, it's definitely felt.
Most importantly, the animals at the shelter are still getting the love and treatment that they deserve until they find their new forever home.
The animals by far are not being declined any sort of care. They are still getting fed on an appropriate schedule twice a day. They now have much more interaction from staff members who are here And without members of the public, without our volunteers helping out, that is a task that's been assigned to all staff members. So even I get to walk through the cats and dogs and pet and talk to and interact with. We do have a virtual adoption process, which has been extremely successful. I think people were a little reluctant at first, but virtual seems to be the new norm.
The animal shelter is closed to the public, but that doesn't mean that community members still can't contribute.
We really appreciate financial donations. We also have a donation box in our parking lot. So if you're wanting to donate something, you can drive through and drop off. That is the safest, best way to do that. We do have specific needs that we will often put up on Facebook. So donations are still welcome. If there's something exotic that you're interested in donating, you may want to call first to see if we would have use for it or if we're able to accept it. One thing that I have admired in my tenure here at the shelter is that our community is so compassionate to animals and so generous.
Maggie is a fantastic dog who would do well in any household. Maggie has good manners, and while she can be initially excited, she calms down quickly. She already knows several behaviors, including sit, down, sit pretty, and paw. She walks great on a leash and seems to be house trained. While Maggie does well with other dogs, she does have a high prey drive, however, so she should not live in a home with cats or other small animals. To learn more about Maggie and our virtual adoption process, call Frederick County Animal Control and Pet Adoption Center at 301-600-1546.
With the approval and guidance of the state of Maryland, Frederick County has begun the distribution of the COVID-19 vaccine to people who live and work here. Vaccinations are available by appointment only, and participants must meet the required guidelines and have proper documentation. To learn more about the vaccination process, check eligibility and more, log on to frederickcountymd.gov/COVID-vaccine.
Times have been tough, and right here in Frederick County, people are currently in need of food. And that is why the new Frederick County Online Food Distribution Mapping app was created. Frederick County Geographic Information Systems and Frederick County Emergency Management teamed up with local nonprofit community members to make the food distribution mapping app readily available and user-friendly for Frederick County residents. This mapping app provides detailed information for more than 80 food distribution locations. Information includes hours of operation, directions on where to pick